Industry has been watching the development of autonomous trucks for a little more than a decade now. Interest really blossomed about 5 years ago when companies like Starsky Robotics, Waymo, Otto, Embark, Kodiak, and others managed to secure enough investor interest to take their projects to the streets. Some of those companies are still with us, and we see new names entering the fray almost every month. Here to talk about the progress we're making on the road to level 4 autonomy are two of the industry's pioneers, Daimler Truck and Torc Robotics, an independent subsidiary of Daimler Truck. Joanna Butler is the head of Daimler Truck's Global Autonomous Technology Group. She's based in Portland, Oregon. And Peter Schmidt is the CEO of Torc Robotics. He's based in Blacksburg, Virginia. We'll begin the interview in just a moment, but first, please subscribe to the channel and leave us a comment when you're finished watching. This is HDT Talks Trucking. I'm Jim Park. We'll be right back.
SmartWay Verified Double Coin Truck Tires support the sustainability goals of the transportation industry. To find a dealer or truck stop near you, visit www.doublecointires.com. The smart money is on Double Coin.
Well, let's get started, folks. We've got Peter Schmidt with us from Torc Robotics and Joanna Butler from Daimler Trucks North America. Thanks for joining us on HDT Talks Trucking.
Hello.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having us.
Let's start the conversation with a kind of little bit of an overview of the autonomous vehicle industry at the moment. What's the regulatory landscape look like right now in 2023? Which states are in, which states are out, which ones are you having trouble with? Where are we on that front right now?
Well, thank you, Jim, for this question about the regulatory landscape. I first want to really explain why we're even embarking on this journey of autonomous driving. We have a vision of zero fatalities, zero unplanned downtime, and ultimately also at some point zero emissions. And with autonomous trucks, we can help reduce the accidents on the road. We can help fleets to run their business more efficiently, and we can answer the high freight demand that we're seeing coming in the future and already see today. So with that said, it is important to us also that when it comes to the regulatory landscape, that we are ready when the technology is ready. And for that purpose, we're working closely with authorities and with governments and trying to educate how we develop this technology, how we test, and how we will release it. In terms of which states are favorable, we definitely chose the United States as our first market entry because we see generally a really favorable regulatory framework for us. All the states we're currently testing in, together with Torc Robotics, New Mexico, Arizona, Texas, have been favorable and really receiving us well in their states. And I think that is also in part because of Torc and Daimler Truck proactively communicating what we're going to do, how we're going to do that. And I think that is really key, Jim, here also in the future. And then overall, we should jointly as an industry drive towards an overarching regulatory framework that keeps our roads safe, but also that ensures that we have appropriate standards that we can work towards releasing this technology safely and reliably.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I suppose you're looking at certain corridors right now, I-10 for one. What about expanding up to some of the other ones like 40 and 80, I-5? Those are major freight corridors. Are those states talking to, or are you talking to them about initiating some pilot projects in those areas?
Peter, I'll let you take it here, but just to comment, I think Torc Robotics actually started testing on the I-40 corridor. I know most companies started on I-10. We have actually, or Torc has a testing location up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and is now also expanding their test corridor into other states and routes. But Peter, why don't you comment a little bit on that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Our main test corridor is I-40. So it's Arizona, it's New Mexico, Texas. This is where we mainly drive, centered around Albuquerque. And I think there, target deployment area for this technology is that so-called Sunbelt. Let's say everything south of I-40 to start with.
How about your home state of Virginia? Any luck up there?
Yeah, I mean, we are testing here also every day because it's just so super convenient. The nice thing about our headquarters in Blacksburg, it's not only that with I-81, you really have a high dense interstate just in front of the door, but even cooler, where we have a test track here from BTTI, which is really, I can look out of my window and see it. This is so convenient for our engineers just to go out there and doing tests. Because tests always start first in simulation and then second on closed course before you go on public routes. So it's a very favorable environment here, and especially this mini ecosystem around the Virginia Tech is just perfect for us.
AAA just released a survey of public perception of autonomous vehicles. I think probably they were talking mostly about cars, but I think the number they quoted was 68% of the members they surveyed said they were afraid of driverless vehicles. People are already afraid of trucks. Is that a compounding effect, do you think, or where is the public with respect to driverless trucks?
Again, I think I go back to the fact that what we have to do here is really build the trust in this technology. And the first step is to not just talk about how we are developing this safely, but also demonstrating this and utilizing opportunities like this podcast, for example, you know, to really showcase what we want to achieve with this technology, what the ultimate goal is. There's, you know, other perceptions, like will this, for example, remove jobs and how it actually can benefit society instead of being a threat to society. And as I said, also, when we test on public roads, you'll right now see always a driver behind the wheel. And in addition to that, even a safety engineer on the passenger seat to ensure that while we develop this technology, we have good oversight of the system and do so safely. And we will not take the driver out, so to speak, until we're really certain that the system, the truck and the software can handle all the driving situations it's released for safely without any human intervention.
And I think people will also find out that our truck is really polite, our autonomous truck. Yeah, it's never overspeeding. It does a ton of courtesy maneuver. It never gets aggressive. So it has a really, really nice driving style that you would like to see from all road users. I hope that over time we can really convince society and people around us that it's not only safe, but that these are really good road users alongside you.
We talk a bit about that technology, just kind of a 40,000 foot view. We've been at this for a number of years. The technology has improved. Can you kind of put it in such a way that we understand where we started with the earliest forms of autonomous technology and where we are today, just as a talk about how those systems have developed over the years?
I think the earliest systems, all of this goes back more or less to the famous DARPA Urban Challenges, so in the year 2005-ish. And from there on, it developed. Todd, by the way, was also participating in that competition. So Torque is a 17-year-old company and really has the roots back in the DARPA Urban Challenges, and came in third. So we are really proud of this. But since then, the technology really developed immensely. Back then, it was mainly some pretty crazy, super expensive handmade sensors and a purely robotic approach. So you were mainly driving off a map, and then you had some laser scanners, for example, to find out where you are and what the people around you are doing. It was really then a question, for example, which path are you going? So some companies and people were really chasing this holy grail of robotaxi. Torque went a completely different way and more or less focused on the so-called early adopters, where, let's say, with the limited ability of this technology, you could make money pretty early on. And this was military defense, and it was mining, where the first application of this technology was. And that what Torque was doing over many, many years and improving the tech. In 2019, we saw this. The huge opportunity of trucking, plus also all the progress that has happened in technology. And there's a ton. All sensors are on a complete different level of performance, be it density, be it range. The computing power that you get affordable in a complete different range. All this AI machine learning. Back then, it was more or less classical algorithms, defining a shape, finding out a shape, all this learning, learned objects, training algorithms. What do I see? Is it a car? Is it a truck? Or you have an occluded objects where you only can see 10 or 20% so that you can still identify it precisely. All of this hadn't been there. All of this is now available. In addition, there's a complete new simulation environment. So the technology just leapfrogged. And I think we are now at a complete different state where you see all this technology is now, the inflection point of this technology is coming and putting autonomous driving on a complete new level.
So it's fair to say that if you had any preconceived notions about what this technology was 10 years ago, 5 years ago, totally different now. It's not even the same ballpark, is it?
Yeah, you're spot on. This is okay. Day and night.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the fleets and your ultimate consumers and customers here. There's basically, as I understand it, two different fleet business models. There's the truck as a service model, and then we have the fleets that have, you know, their own trucks, their own fleet of autonomous trucks. How does a fleet decide which way to go, how to embrace this technology, whether to buy their own or contract another company as a service?
Maybe I'll set us off for this question, because I want to share here our core belief and also how we want to launch this technology really is never getting into the business of our customers, so to speak. So we have a clear agreement with Torque and also our other partner that ultimately our vision is that the fleets who are today operating trucks, who are today providing logistics services, will also do that in the future. So for us, we want to provide a better means for them to do their job even more efficiently and safer. And that is, in this case, with an autonomous driving vehicle and a driver as a service, so to speak.
Yeah, I can only second this. First of all, logistics is much more than just driving. Yeah? There's a lot of things needed to bring freight from A to B reliably and at scale. And the fleets are just fantastic in that. And our core belief is really better enable them to do their business better, yeah? Because goods can arrive faster, safer, maybe cheaper, to the benefit of all, to the benefit of the fleet, but also to the benefit of the end user. So the milk in the grocery store could be cheaper. So this is really what we want to achieve instead of trying to compete with fleets and rebuilding what they are already doing perfectly. So it's really more about enabling the entire market to improve their services instead of replicating something.
Is it a big step, do you think, for a fleet to take on an autonomous truck? Right now, they're used to dispatching drivers. Now we have the infrastructure, the hub and spoke deal. There's that side of it. But what about the operation generally? How easy or difficult will it be to integrate this technology into fleet operations?
I think it will be a challenge, to be honest. And that's why we involve customers, fleets, pretty early in the development process. So we have an advisory council, and Joanna can comment on this a little bit more. We're key players of the industry of different segments, yeah, be it parcel, be it over the road, really contribute and help us develop a product that is really helpful for them. There are different aspects. It starts with simple operation and maintenance. You know, there's not only a shortage of drivers, there's also a shortage of technicians. So what does that mean for all their operations maintenance in the future? This is, let's say, the pretty simple first step, but then also how to operate down the road mixed fleet, because let's be honest, it won't be all autonomous day one, maybe never. It will be always a mixed fleet. So how do you operate a mixed fleet of manual driven trucks and autonomous driven trucks? And so it's mandatory and absolutely crucial that our trucks more seamlessly can be used through APIs in today's mission controls, where dispatcher would then dispatch loads to manual driven trucks, to autonomous trucks. But it also the restriction that the autonomous trucks bring, for example, are pretty clear to the system. For example, they can only run I-40,000, not in Chicago day one, and things like that. All of this you need to take into account. And so we are working hard to keep the restrictions as low as possible and to seamlessly integrate into customer processes and systems to make the switch and to use this technology and the first step an easy one.
Do you think there'll be many differences on the shop floor, for example, aside from the technology stack, which probably most fleets won't poke their fingers into, but just general maintenance and overall operation of the trucks? Is it going to be any different from that point of view?
Yeah, let me take that one maybe from the base vehicle side. So as we define and design the autonomous ready platforms, so the autonomous ready Cascadia, we're developing so-called redundant systems. So these are systems that can act and interact if there's a failure. Think about your steering, your brakes, but also power generation. So we have designed these with a couple principles in mind. On the one hand side, for sure, manufacturability, because we want at some point be at scale, serviceability as well, and then also commonality with parts and designs that are today already in production. What that means is that the training and of the mechanics and technicians is easier because they're already familiar with some of these components. It still looks like a Cascadia, feels like a Cascadia, and you know, maybe have one additional part of the same, so to speak. So trying to really keep it as easy as possible. But what is certainly happening is we see much more technology and much more software in even in the base vehicle as well. So really developing the right diagnostic tools, developing the right software release cadences, and training also the fleets up on that is going to be crucial as well. But I would say from the hardware perspective, we're trying to keep it you know, as much common and known and familiar as we know components today.
And Freightliner really does a phenomenal job there. I mean, that their autonomous ready Cascadia, it will be an object of desire, like today's classical object, classical Cascadia is. And it's a huge benefit for us, Torque, majority owned by Daimler Trucks, that we can develop a seamless integrated truck without any IP barriers. You know, this truck down the road, it will be built in Freightliner's plants. So it's not a retrofit prototype booth thing, but it's really designed to come off the assembly lines. And this is the only way how to really guarantee reliability, quality, good cost position, and then seamlessly integrate it also into the entire service and maintenance network of Freightliner. I think it's a unique advantage. And it this will also help us the adoption of the technology. That's, I think, a core piece to make easy for fleets to use this technology.
Well, when you talk about redundant systems, I don't want to go too deep into the woods here, and steering, for example, you're not talking about two separate hydraulic power steering gears. You're talking about two separate electronic motor controls or sensors on the steering column. What is redundant steering mean?
Exactly. You said it right. So when we talk about...
So what do I need you here for then? Okay, I know what I'm doing. Sorry.
You may have heard about it already. Yes, for example, if you take the redundant steering system, we have two electromotors that provide steering power and input. So, and they both operate, so to speak, always simultaneously, sharing the power. So if one goes out, you have always a secondary motor that can support the steering input and can help to guide and steer the vehicle safely to the side of the road, all with the input from the virtual driver, so to speak. So if there's a failure being sensed, then a minimum risk maneuver will be introduced and the steering system will still be able to be controlled by the virtual driver, now only with one steering motor. And we have to make sure that at that point in time, you have this minimum risk maneuver, otherwise you violate kind of the principles of redundancy. And then you'll have a mission control or center that can then assess the situation, and initiate further action of this mission.
But again, to second, this is what I love about Freightliner. It's just done so great in detail. You know, you have two, but they both run at 50%. One goes off, the other goes to 100%. You have still the same controllability, maneuverability as before. And it's really in the details. It's just done greatly. Yeah, and safe. Yeah, and that's really how it should be made.
At no moment where you sort of have to turn one system off and turn the other one on. They're just integrated and functioning in unison all the time.
Exactly. And it has to work in a split second. So, you know, I think the seamless taken over of the redundancy is really critical.
Okay. Well, you talked earlier when we first got started, Joanna, about safety, reducing accidents, zero crashes, zero fatalities. I don't know how realistic that is. It's a nice moonshot goal, but with autonomous trucks, what kind of crashes do you hope or expect you'll be able to reduce? I mean, we have a myriad number of crashes from the, you know, truck into the back of the car due to driver inattention. Okay, I can see where autonomous would be able to mitigate those or probably outright prevent them. Side swipes, lane change incidents, but they're still going to be involved in collisions of some sort. Car driving into the side of the truck, into the back of it, whatever. You can't control that. People are going to hang that on you anyway. But what sort of crashes do you think you've got a good chance of mitigating or preventing altogether?
Should I take
Yeah, sure. Why don't you?
The silence is
you're developing the most court. You're developing the most courteous driver. So.
I think a lot of things that are more or less related to overspeeding, distraction. I think they can really be avoided by this technology because a computer, you know, gets never aggressive, gets never tired, and things like that. The second category, I think, where the system in principle is better than humans is reaction times. So, for example, that trucks drive incredibly well in strong side winds, even with gusts, because the system can react with milliseconds and we humans don't have a reaction time of a millisecond. So these are the two types where the computer as a driver is better than humans. There might be that there are situations where the computer is worse. That is, if you're really driving in super inclement weather, snowstorm and things like that. So today, to be honest, it would shut down the truck and park it. And that's why we are not deploying the technology in Montreal or Chicago, but more I-40,000 where such situations are really limited to, let's say, a couple of hours. But in such situations, humans are just better and the computer wouldn't do better. But this is mainly, I think, how you can improve the safety using a computer.
Well, if you looked at a statistic like, you know, number of crashes per 100,000 miles or million miles, you compare a human driver based on statistics, not just computer estimates. And now I guess you've got enough miles under your belt to say, you know, we've got statistics that show zero accidents per 400,000 miles or whatever your metric is. You've got to be way out ahead of the human driver at this point. I have to believe that. I've never actually seen a number, but why aren't we ready to go 100% with this on level five? If you've already established that autonomous drivers are safer drivers than human drivers, why are we still waiting to take the driver out of the truck?
Oh, there's still a lot of technology. There's still a lot of polishing that needs to take place. It's not so much the standard driving, but it's really all the edge cases where humans are super great in to make sure that all of them are solved to a level like a human. Because I think that must be the minimum threshold, be as good as an exemplary driver. And then on top, take out all the things that happen through distractions and things like that. But it's a really, really high bar. And on the other hand, there are still a lot of, let's say, basic development to be done to make a supercomputer in a truck an automotive water-cooled computer that can last 1,000,000 miles. You know, there's one thing, developing technology on a prototype truck, but then really developing this technology where you now think, hey, this will work, but to make it really so robust that it's an automotive product that you then can also give in customer hands, and the customer is more happy than just day one, but also day 100 and day 1,000. This is still a lot of detailed work and engineering work that needs to be done. So both hardening the product and still working through some really challenging things in the edge cases.
And we also want to, kind of reduce complexity as much as possible. That's why we're targeting also hub-to-hub, level 4, not to boil the ocean right away. When you talk about level 5, that would mean, that vehicle can go anywhere at any time, no driver needed, and that is definitely not the goal for this first launch. And, we still believe with hub-to-hub level 4, we can have here a product that already provides a lot of benefits again to the fleets and can increase the safety without having to go that next step that, exponentially would increase the engineering effort that it would be needed to achieve that.
A question that's going to come up amongst fleets customers at some point, because they are obviously governed by their insurance carriers and the insurance industry. Where are you, or the autonomous industry, with respect to insurance now? You've got to be having conversations with them. Are they happy with this? Are they excited about the accident reduction potential, or are they still nervous about this technology?
Oh, I think on our end,
probably all of the above, right?
Yeah. But we also have still, we are in discussions, so we are not done with them by far. I mean, it's pretty sure that also liability will shift a little bit. I think the liability with the base vehicle will stay with the OEM as today. Liability of the driver, now it's virtual, will be with us, Torc. And so that's why we're also pretty interested in discussions with insurances, how all this could look like, how do you insure an autonomous truck, and of course, how would the rate look like down the road. There are a lot of implementing autonomy is much more than driving. Ecosystem where we are touching in the beginning, but it's just another interesting aspect, and there are so many things that need to be solved to really then to deploy the technology finally. And it's it's a solvable problem, but there's still some work to do, definitely.
Well, as a fleet owner, fleet manager, I'm going to have to be talking to my insurance company before I put any of these trucks into service, and just kind of trying to get some sense of what kind of questions they need to be asking, or whether the insurance companies are going to be accepting of this, or is it just going to be, whoa, hold it, we're not ready to do that yet.
Yeah, we will have the customers with solutions there.
Mm-hmm. All right. One more before we wrap up, and I'll let you go. This game has gone on for a long time, longer than a lot of people probably thought it would, because they didn't understand how complex it all was. There's a lot of players who got into the game early. A few of them have disappeared. Where do you think we're going to be in 5 years, maybe however long it takes to roll this out to 100%? Are we still going to have like a dozen autonomous vehicle companies out there rattling around the roads? When's the investment money going to run out, I guess, is the question I'm asking.
I mean, I think we're all watching and observing what's happening right now pretty closely in the market. But to be honest, we always believe that we will see some sort of consolidation in the market. I think that's starting to happen right now. And if we think 5 or 10 years ahead, we could see like 3 to 4 players surviving this game. And I think the premise in order to be a player in the future, I would say there's a couple of things that need to be there. On the one hand side, I think you have to have a solid OEM partnership and a truck platform. So I say that very selfishly, being one of the providers. We hear and see that just in general, that this is definitely one of the success factors. And the other success factor we really believe is to just stay focused from the autonomy side in, how and what use case you really develop and do that very, very well. So that's, Peter's and Torc's job to establish that, do that safely and reliably and responsibly. So we cannot afford any errors, so to speak, on that. And then lastly, I guess also, what we said earlier, take your customers along the way, really understand the customer, understand their business, do that early, and don't try to be in their business, but try to be a partner within their business. I think that is going to be critical. And then also continue to advocate, educate, and really solidly communicate what this technology can do, so society and regulators can also buy in and support this technology in the future. And I think with those ingredients, you're going to be a strong player.
Okay. Peter, you want to add anything to that? Or
No, talked me around since quite a while. And together with Daimler, we made a statement pretty early on. We think this technology will be at scale end of the decade and will start mid of the decade. And we made those statements. It sounded a little bit like dinosaur or unambitious. To be honest, today, I'm really happy that we never joined this hype cycle and scaled way too early before the technology wasn't ready. And I think we were pretty accurate with our forecast. And for me, it's really now hard to see all this gloom and doom and consolidation. On our end, you may have seen we have acquired a Canadian company, Algolux, just you can't have enough computer vision specialists and AI machine learning specialists. So we are now playing offense because we think now you have the inflection point of technology where we are coming really close, that it's now the time to really launch the technology. So I think our strategy was pretty right and to the point. So I'm optimistic on our future and that we will be one of the winner of the consolidation alongside with Freightliner.
Absolutely.
All right. I hope you're both correct. Thanks for spending some time with us this afternoon. I sure appreciate it. We've been speaking with Joanna Butler. She's the head of Global Autonomous Truck Group, Daimler Trucks North America. She's based in Portland. And Peter Von Schmidt, the CEO of Torque Robotics. He joined us from Blacksburg, Virginia. Thanks to you both. Hope to see you again soon.
Thank you.
Don't forget to subscribe to Heavy Duty Trucking's YouTube channel and give us a like. That helps other people to find us. Check out our other social media channels too. We're on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And remember, there's lots of great written content about the trucking industry on our website, truckinginfo.com. I'm Jim Park. Thanks for watching.